which version of me is most apt to help Jason, the overwhelmed and stressed out entrepreneur, deal with his problems? Is it the one that's confused who I am for that role? Or is it this clear, calm one who understands that's just a role that I'm playing and I don't have to take it that seriously?
Welcome to Next Level University. I am your host, Kevin Palmieri.
And I am your host, Alan Lazarus.
At Next Level University, we believe in a heart-driven, but no BS approach to holistic self-improvement for entrepreneurs.
We bring you 7 episodes a week, 6 of which are solo episodes with Kevin and myself, and one world-class guest to help you level up your life, your love, your health, and your wealth.
Self-improvement in your pocket, every day, from anywhere, for free. Welcome to Next Level University. Next Level Nation, welcome back to another very special, as always, episode of Next Level University. Today, we have a very special guest. He is a mindset mentor and self-leadership coach for celebrities, change makers, and CEOs. He's also a podcaster, author, speaker, and rapper, the one and only Jason Goldberg. Jason, what is going on, my friend?
Not Alan. So good to see you. Thanks so much for having me on the show. And actual Alan, thanks for having me on the show. So excited to be here, guys.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Kevin.
Absolutely. Yes, Jason called me Alan in the beginning, the worst thing I've ever been called in my entire life, but we'll let it slide. We'll let it slide. So Jason, what is self-leadership? That's something that you're branded as and something you help people with. What is the deeper understanding of what is self-leadership?
Yeah, I mean, at a really core level, it's personal responsibility. But the way that I tend to approach it is I don't necessarily believe there's any kind of leadership in the world except self-leadership. I don't actually believe you can lead others. I think that you can set an example and model what self-leadership looks like, and people can be inspired to want to experience that in their own lives, and they lead themselves. It looks like we're leading other people, but really it's that we do something that activates self-leadership in them. So it's a sense of personal responsibility, and it's really a sense of curiosity and creativity about the world, not taking things at face value, knowing how to navigate our own thinking so we don't become a victim of our thoughts, we don't become a prisoner of our experience and our circumstance of life, and really just having more control over the way we navigate life as opposed to controlling life. It's not about controlling life, but controlling how we navigate life.
I would be disappointed in myself if I didn't ask this, and I know Alan will go layers deep on everything you just said. You work with celebrities, you work with high-level people, and I think, and myself included, I assume, just like I assume doctors had it all figured out and teachers and, you know, everybody has it all figured out. What is a common misconception that people believe about a celebrity? And you don't have to say anything specific, obviously, but versus the reality. I think people assume everything, consciousness, awareness, habits, productivity is at a next level. What have you found? What has been highlighted for you?
Yeah, I mean, what I've seen in coaching people, that everybody from, you know, celebrities to astrophysicists to pro surfers to single moms to e-commerce entrepreneurs, like all these people, they're all still human. That's their one common denominator. And so nobody is immune because of their profession or vocation from the human experience. Mm-hmm. And so what I see in everybody is that everybody is trying to, and when I say everybody, I mean myself included, we're all trying to optimize how it is we respond to life so that we can experience more peace, experience more joy, experience less stress, experience more connection. These are all things that everybody's looking for. So to think that anybody in the world, even if they're people who are in the personal growth world, and if you meet people in the personal growth world who say they never struggle with anything, run as fast as you can. It's like a skinny chef. Like, you never trust a skinny chef, never trust a personal growth expert who doesn't have any trials or tribulations in their life. So what I've noticed, and it was very surprising to me in the beginning, is that they are no different. The things that they work on, it may involve different people. It may have a different impact when and if they master it, but it's the exact same stuff they're all working on.
My goodness. I really, really appreciate you saying that. Let me ask you this. So, and I love the frame of leadership regarding there are no leaders. There are just you becoming an example, which catalyzes other people to take more responsibility and become more of a leader. That was the first time I've ever heard it phrased that way. Absolutely adore it. One of my favorite quotes is Abraham Lincoln. He says, "Leading by example is not the best way to lead. It's the only way."
So yes, fire. Love that. Yes.
So let me ask you this. Why do you believe that more people don't take personal responsibility? And can we go deeper on what you believe personal responsibility actually is, and give a tangible example of when you embodied that?
Yeah, 100%. So the reason I think that most people don't embody self-leadership is because it's not something that, at least in, I'll definitely say my generation and back, like older, it just wasn't modeled. And so for me, you know, I was raised in a household that spoke English. I'm not dumb or wrong or, you know, stupid in some way for not being able to speak French. I was never exposed to it. And so I think most people are just not exposed to the language of self-leadership, to the mindset, the thoughts, the belief systems, the actions of a self-leader. And so it was something that I didn't even really start understanding for myself until I was in my late 20s, early 30s, right? It's just not something that I was taught. So for me, what I defaulted to, and this is what I've seen, I thought this was, of course, my unique experience. And then the more humans I talked to, I realized it wasn't, was, you know, I lived so much of my life in the beginning, first 30 years, I mean, maybe not the first 4 or 5 years, but then, you know, once I was like in school, probably, and then all the way through into my early 30s, late 20s, early 30s, prisonerness, right? Being a victim of circumstance. I wrote a book called Prison Break. So when I talk about being a prisoner, I'm talking about kind of like victimhood. The victimhood was the best way that I knew how to get love, how to get acceptance, how to get approval, how to get attention, to feel important, to feel cared about. When I acted like a victim and I pouted, mommy came and gave me love and made sure that I felt important and said, oh, sweetie, let me help, let me take care of it. And this was the healthiest way I knew as a child to receive love. The challenge became is that when I wasn't a child anymore, I kept operating from that frame to receive love. And it's not that I never have victim moments anymore. It's now that I have the understanding of, oh, I'm choosing to be this person who thinks the healthiest thing that I can do in this moment is to completely absolve myself of any personal power, of any personal responsibility, and hope that somebody comes and saves me. And one of the things that I loved, it was something I heard from one of my mentors, Steve Chandler, years and years ago, that he was actually working with a therapist in a group setting. And the therapist goes up to the front of the room and just writes really big on a board, no one is coming, right? No one is coming to save you, to do it for you. No one's coming. And so my coach raised his hand and said, yeah, but you came. And he said, well, I just came to tell you that nobody's coming. And so I think that that's something to really to understand is like there are so many opportunities for us to do things through and with people. That's not personal responsibility. It's not I'm going to take the world on my shoulders and never ask for help. Personal responsibility is about being real with yourself, about truths that you're not facing, about opportunities that exist that you can capitalize on ways that you can be growing and evolving and serving and all these different things. That's all a part of that. So for me, personal responsibility has become, in a lot of ways, I kind of bring these two words together. It's about my own integrity, right? Integrity to my word, to myself, integrity to my word to others. When I focus on being in integrity to myself and others, I have no choice but to be in a place of self-leadership.
How much,
very well said.
How much of your journey, and I'm very excited to ask this question. I have this written down and I'm glad we're going there. How much of your journey has been internal versus learning about things from books, learning about sales, whatever it may be. I think that in this moment, from what you were saying, I believe the people who succeed at the highest levels are just the people who are the most self-aware. And so what percentage for you, out of 100% of everything, success, everything you've had, what percentage of that is because of the inner personal growth that you've done?
I'd say it's 80-20 if I'm being generous to the 20, right? It's been 80% internal work, 80% mindset. And it's so easy because of the proliferation of personal growth and self-help. It's so easy to discount mindset. Mindset has become a cliche thing. And there's a reason that things are cliche. It's because they typically stand the test of time. Like they're usually, you know, pretty real. And that's why they keep coming back around over and over again. So I think it's so good to look at this because, and here's a perfect example of this. I did a keynote for a property management convention. It's 500 or 600 property managers. And I had spoken for them before. So they gave me an option. They said, do you want to be the opening speaker or the closing speaker? And I said, well, tell me who else is speaking. And they told me, and it was this fantastic weekend of speakers that were all strategic and tactical and business growth and all these things. And I said, okay, I want to be the closing speaker, but on one condition. And they said, what's the condition? I said, that I be able to call the talk why everything you learned this weekend still won't work for you on Monday. And they said, okay, tell us more. And I said, it's exactly this thing. It's like, you know, we've all had these amazing strategies. We've all gone home from the conferences all raring to go with all this information that we want to implement. And then something gets in the way. Well, what is that? So if mindset is not the most important thing, then tell me what it is about the strategies that are not implementing themselves. Why are they not getting implemented if you have these great strategies? So the mindset stuff is just, it can't be overstated how important that is.
That's powerful. And like you said, it has become somewhat, I don't want to say cliche. I'm glad you're talking about it like you are, because you're not just saying, well, you have to change this thing. You're able to go layers and layers and layers deeper. And I think that's what makes the biggest shift. Alan, can I follow up real quick?
Of course, man. Absolutely.
Okay. Alan and myself are coaches. from this conversation, I would know you're a good coach because you're not at the surface level. You go deeper, deeper, deeper. How does someone that doesn't have enough awareness to realize how you're going to help them realize that you're a good coach? So how does somebody figure out somebody is a valuable coach without having to go through the pain of a negative experience, maybe?
I feel like that's a great question. So a couple of things come to mind as I think about that. Number one is energetic resonance, right? I really believe that success, I used to say success in coaching. Now I'd say success in any business that includes humans, is 90% who you are and 10% what you do. Right. It's not, there's so many people, there's so much information out there and there's so much access to information. What you know and your expertise is important. It's very important. Don't get me wrong. But that's 10% of the equation because there's plenty of other people that have the same knowledge, the same understanding. They have this, you know, similar background or track record or education or experience. But who you are is the reason that you can hear something 10 different times from 10 different people and it doesn't land. And then you hear it the 11th time and you go, oh, that's gold. And the other 10 people are like, I've been telling you that for a year. And like, no, but you didn't say it like that person said it. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to be revolutionary with how you show up in the world. You just want to be evolutionary. You want to evolve and bring that evolved perspective into the conversation. So I think that's one part of it. And then the second part, that's a little more of a tactical part. I actually just finished filming a course a couple weeks ago for Mindvalley. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Mindvalley stuff. Yeah. So, and it was all about using metaphors and distinctions and storytelling to facilitate transformation. And one of the things that I have really attributed so much of my abilities as a coach to is to be able to come up with either unique original metaphors or to be able to tell stories that are metaphors from other people, because metaphors trick the ego. When you're in a coaching conversation with somebody, we think there's two people there, you and me, the coach, but there are three people. There's you, there's me, and there's your ego trying to block everything that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Story is a great way to circumvent that because the ego says, oh, it's a story. Okay, so nothing major is happening here. I can go to sleep, but then it seeps in and the message actually comes up. So the more that I can work in metaphor and story, the less somebody's resistance comes up to push away what's being said, if that makes sense.
For sure.
Why? That was one of the best ways I've ever heard that articulated, because when I coach, and honestly, this might be negative to some people, but I'm going to say it. When I coach men, there tends to be more ego. It's challenging for me. My question is, why do you think that is? And maybe it's just me, my projection as well. I think I'm involved in that equation too. Maybe I trigger the ego, maybe
intense.
A man telling another man. Yeah, exactly. I'm very intense, that kind of thing. But let me ask you this, a deeper layer rather than the male versus female thing, because I don't want to go down that road. But why do you think the ego is so present in a coaching setting?
Well, it's a protective measure. So the ego is not a bad thing. I actually did an episode of my podcast called Your Ego is Your Amigo, because somebody on my team had a sweatshirt that said, your ego is not your amigo, and it sparked a conversation like, well, really? Is the ego the problem? And the ego is not the problem. The ego is there for a very important reason. It's part of what keeps you alive. The challenge becomes, you know, if you try to use a hammer to make scrambled eggs, it seems like a really stupid tool. But if you use a hammer to hang a picture on the wall, it seems perfect, right? So the ego is a great tool, but when it gets repurposed incorrectly, then it actually holds us back from what we're doing. And if you look at the male-female perspective or the masculine-feminine dynamic and perspective, I think one of the things that happens there where it seems like there's more ego for men, it's because for men, typically, historically, depending on how you were raised, it's unacceptable for a man to show fear. It's acceptable for a man to show anger, right? And anger is just a socially acceptable form of fear that men have bought into that it's okay to express. Right. So the ego is essentially saying, I'm not going to show you my fear, so I'll show you this instead. Women are typically, again, historically, depending how they were raised, it's a little less difficult for them to tap into and share the fact that there's fear.
Hello, my name is Eddie Pinero. I'm the founder of Your World Within, and I wanted to take a second and just express how valuable working with Alan has been, both personally and professionally. I think his ability to help me create clarity and maintain focus on my big picture goals has been huge. But also, and this is just as important, you know, he's been a huge asset with the roadmap as well. The day-to-day things, the little things that we sometimes overlook. And those two things in tandem have been a huge lift and just a tremendous return on investment. And I think anyone looking to, grow themselves, grow a business or both, would truly benefit from having Alan as an ally along the way. Again, great mind, but more importantly, solid dude.
And I think that, and I've heard Doc Jen say this on one of our episodes. I don't know if you know
Doc Jen. I love Doc Jen. She's great. Yeah, of course.
She's
I love her.
Sweetheart, right?
Yeah.
Huge fan. So that's her brand. So funny. What are people saying about you when you're not in the room? It's mm-hmm. awesome. Yep. She said this. She said, we went on a retreat where we just got to beat the crap out of stuff with bats as females because we were learning how to uncondition from not being ever able to show anger or assertiveness. Because it's less acceptable to be assertive, quote unquote, in the eyes of society as a female. And I don't want to go down that road, but I really appreciate your holistic understanding. There have already been a few things in this episode that actually tell me that you're also a good coach. So that's really good.
Quick, you guys are great. Can we do an interview every day just so I can hear you guys tell me that I'm here?
I appreciate it.
So into this. Thanks.
Only if you get a new mic. I'm joking.
Oh, no. Mic shaming. Let's talk about mic shaming for a few minutes.
Yeah, exactly. That'll be your next episode. How I got shamed for my Yeti. I hope it goes viral. Say my name right. I'm joking. Okay. So here's a little bit of a selfish question. I know we got to go soon. Who's your favorite leader who self-leads? And why? Who you believe embodied a true self leader?
That's so good, man. There's a lot of people that come to mind. The last boss that I had in my last corporate job, I actually feel was an incredible self leader. And this is before I was even into personal growth. But looking back now at him, I'm like, man, he was just so good. He was connected. He was vulnerable when he needed to be vulnerable. He was authentic. He was very demonstrative with his acknowledgement of people. He showed love pretty openly for being in a corporate environment, all things that I just absolutely love and adore now and are a part of my business. And I never realized until looking back what a self leader he was. He didn't sugarcoat things, but he also didn't panic. He wasn't reactive. And so there was a realness from him. You knew where you stood, you knew what was going on, but you also felt held, you felt protected, right? Even if crap was hitting the fan, you were like, he always exuded this I got you energy. And I think it's actually something that not to get into male female stuff, but that's something that women are typically very excited by, is a man who can bring you this I've got you energy. But I think all of us can step into the I've got you energy. And that was something I remember from him so clearly.
My goodness.
Jason, I was creeping, stalking your YouTube, and I was watching some of your videos. And one of them was about when you get imposter syndrome, when you start to doubt yourself, when those fears creep in, you ask yourself this simple question: who sent you? What are some other powerful questions that you have asked yourself or clients have asked themselves that our listeners can take and use in their everyday life?
Well, if I have the time, can I share like maybe a 3-minute exercise with you that would be really sure. powerful? Do we have time for that? Is that cool?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Absolutely.
So I have this bracelet I'm wearing that I'll tell you what it says in a second. Have you guys seen these, the My Intent bracelets, where you can like get whatever? Yeah, it's one of my buddy's companies, and you can just stamp whatever word or whatever you want on there to kind of remember it for yourself. So let's say for a minute, have you guys seen any of the Batman movies before?
Of course. Oh,
yeah. Big fan. Okay, so if you pick any one of the Batman movies, who's the actor that comes to mind for you when you think of Batman, like the actual Batman character?
Christian Who is it? Bale. Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson, Christian Bale. Okay, so I'm gonna use Christian Bale just because Liam Neeson, he has a very particular set of skills and he may try and come find me. So let's say, Kev, I'm gonna use you. Let's say you're on set and you're filming a new Batman with Christian Bale, and you're filming a scene. He's doing his thing, and you yell cut, and you're talking to your people. You're setting up for the next scene, and you look over and you see him pacing on the set. And you're the director, so you're concerned about your star. So you walk up to him, you go, hey, man, what's going on? You look stressed out. And he goes, oh, Kevin, I don't know, man. Like, what if I can't beat the Joker? What if my technology is not strong enough? What if the people of Gotham die on my watch and it's all my fault? What do I do then? Mm. And you're looking at him like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, what do you know this is a movie, right? But you want to help. And so you have two options here. You can either say, okay, Batman, let's figure out how to beat the Joker. Let's make sure your tech is strong enough. Let's save the people of Gotham together. Or you can remind him that he's Christian Bale. And once he really truly remembers that he's Christian Bale, then a lot of the problems that he thinks are such a big deal, they disappear. And so the reason this is important is because this is actually something that I do for myself. And I actually have this bracelet that says not Batman on it to remind me that I'm not Batman, right? I am playing a role every single day. And sometimes that role is helpful and sometimes it's not. And so I actually have this practice of when I'm feeling any kind of stress or any kind of overwhelm or any kind of whatever, fear, anything. First of all, I want to announce it. I want to name it as if it's a role I'm playing in a movie. So I will literally say, today I am playing the role of Jason, the stressed out and overwhelmed entrepreneur. That is the role that I'm playing. And when I can see the role over there, I'm not negating and saying, oh, that no problems exist. There's nothing going on. Everything's perfect. Everything's an opportunity for growth. I instead ask myself, okay, who's the one having the problems right now? Who's the one that's overwhelmed? Is it me, Jason? Or is it this role that I'm playing today? Have I been cast in a role that I'm playing as the stressed out, overwhelmed entrepreneur? And when I can sit with that for just a minute, and I'll close my eyes and I'll kind of understand that there's this role over there that I've just named. And I ask myself, without an attachment to that role and that identity, not forever, just in this moment, how does that feel? Do I feel more peaceful? Do I feel more stressful? And when I sit there for just a moment, I go, okay, I definitely feel at least a sliver of peace from what I was feeling before. And then I say, great, with this newfound peace, which version of me is most apt to help Jason, the overwhelmed and stressed out entrepreneur, deal with his problems? Is it the one that's confused who I am for that role? Or is it this clear, calm one who understands that's just a role that I'm playing and I don't have to take it that seriously?
Mm. Wow. Yeah, that's
very
beautiful.
Strong.
Beautiful.
Wow.
I do it every day, man. And sometimes twice or three times a day if I'm really in the crap. Yeah. I mean, I got to do it.
I do that with my anxiety. When I get anxiety, I pretend that I'm telling somebody else how to get over it. And it works every time. Every single time. It's like, oh, this isn't real.
And that's non-identification. And non-identification is it. That is outsmarting the part of the ego that's not as helpful, because the ego wants to identify and collapse those things and say, the way you're feeling is who you are. Mm. You have fingernails, but you are not fingernails, right? In the same way you may have anxiety, but you're not anxiety. Yeah. And so ego wants to tell you you are, and you doing the practice that you just said, it unidentifies with that, and you can see some peace in there. So that's beautiful, bro. I love that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you, I know that a lot of your work, I can tell by the way you're talking in this episode, a lot of your coaching has to do with identity.
Yeah, 100%.
And for someone that you've coached that may be more on the famous side, do you feel that the identity issue with them as the famous version is conflicting with them as the real version? And that's where a lot of the challenge comes?
You know, funny enough, I haven't really seen, I expected that. That was what I expected going in, that was what it was going to be. But they're so, like, if you listened, if you took out any pieces of the conversation that were content specific to acting or directing or whatever, and just listened to the actual kind of more of the content or context of the conversation, you would not be able to tell that it was celebrity or it was a cashier at Target. You just wouldn't.
Really?
It's the exact same stuff. And so while one person, while I may be coaching a celebrity who's having an issue with getting funding for a movie that she's written and wants to direct, and somebody else is having a challenge with, you know, their husband not opening up and sharing their feelings, both of them came down to the same thing. They came down to a level of knowing yourself, of self-awareness, of self-leadership. Like all these things, they just play out in different forms, but they're the exact same thing.
So fascinating. Yeah, I want everyone to really hear what you're saying here, because Kevin and I are not famous by any means, but we've met a lot of people that are semi-famous. And it's very clear, coaching so many people and masterminding with so many people, that this human experience, as you mentioned earlier, and one of the books that I read constantly is A Man's Search for Meaning, because it always, I've been reading it to my girlfriend before bed, and I always listen to this book or read this book before bed, because it brings me back to the human experience of, like, we're all human beings. And to answer or to ask you this question, I want to provide some context. So the people that we've met that were super successful with high net worths and were seemingly living the dream, many times when you really get down and into their real life, they're fulfilled sometimes, but sometimes very much not. And so what I want to try to teach our listeners and our viewers, and I've been doing this a lot for a long time, is how do we tell people in advance that that's not what they think it's going to be, but it's still okay to shoot for it? Can you, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you don't. You can't. You can't tell people that it's not going to be the thing. What we can do is we can say, let's say you got that thing. So have you gotten something in the past that was the most important thing in the world ever, and you thought it was going to bring you all the success in the world, and you were going to love it forever? And they say yes. And I say, how do you feel about that thing now? Like, it's whatever. You know? So cool. So you have the experience that maybe it doesn't always bring you the fulfillment you want. This next thing you want, that may not be the case. It may be the thing that you get it and you love it and you're happy forever. I know that's not true, but let's just play devil's advocate, right? Heaven's advocate.
Yeah, that's not true.
Let's just say that's true, right? That it could be true. But in case it's not, how are we going to navigate you being on this constant search for the next thing, the next thing, the next thing? Just hypothetically, let's play with developing a skill set that could help you in a lot of different ways around this particular thing. So my whole thing is my coaching style is not confronting. It's not drill sergeant. It's very much, it's much more Tai Chi than it is Kung Fu.
My goodness.
This is fire. I'm so glad we did this. All right. I got one. We'll do a lightning round question and then we'll let you talk about what's going on in your life. Okay. So how do I want to ask this?
Briefs. Oh, wait.
A lot of people out there say,
boxers or briefs.
I know my worth. I have to charge my worth. I have to charge my worth. I'm not charging enough. I have to continue raising my prices. We have heard people say, just add a zero to your pricing and everything's going to work out. Bullshit. Doesn't work that way. How do you know your value, but also know what you should be charging, as somebody who started charging $25 a call when you started this journey? Like, what would you tell that person? And what would you tell somebody out there right now who says, I know my value, I need to charge more?
So the interesting thing about like charging your value is I think it works off of a flawed premise, because if I told you, Alan, if I said, I'm going to drive your car 5 feet, how much would you pay me to drive your car 5 feet?
$0.
Now, what if I say that the car is on top of your legs? How much will you pay me to drive 5 feet?
Right. All of money in my bank account.
Right. So I have zero value in intrinsically, inherently with what I do. There's zero value unless there's somebody on the other side who sees that there is some value to be received. Mm-hmm. So I am quote worth from a dollar perspective, whatever the person in front of me deems that thing is worth. Right. Now I may set a pricing, and then the goal here is to have a conversation with somebody and to get deep enough into their world and what they want to create so that they can tell me why it's worth that much for that to happen. I never want to be in the seat of convincing. I'm in the seat of auditioning, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm creating like the most amazing Broadway play ever, I'm creating the next Hamilton, and I know I can only have a certain amount of people on that stage, which is the same as me saying I can only take on a certain number of clients. This is not to be arrogant or narcissistic, but it's for me to say like, I only have a spot for 5 or 6 people on this stage, and I want to make sure they're really going to show up. I want to make sure that we have a great working relationship. I want to make sure they are dedicated to this process no matter what it's going to take. And when I'm in the spot of auditioning in that way, then I come from a place of love and service of whether or not I offer ongoing coaching to this person. So the pricing conversation, you know, I definitely am not of the school of thought. There are some schools of thought that say have this crazy, incredible price and then like just wait until somebody's willing to pay that. I personally don't subscribe to that. I say get as much practice as you can, get butts in seats. I don't care what you're charging, but your track record of success, like Steve Martin says, be so good they can't ignore you. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen by you waiting for somebody to pay $25,000 for your coaching for 2 years. You don't become so good they can't ignore you that way.
Wonderful. That's exactly what Alan and I subscribe to. And I'm very glad another coach who coaches is saying the same thing. Jason, this has been wonderful. Where can people find more about you? I know you have a lot of different things going on. Talk about you, Jason.
I'm on the corner of Lincoln and Washington in Venice. No, I'm kidding. I'm just sitting out in the corner waiting for anybody who wants to come talk to me. Best place to find me is on Instagram, the Jason Goldberg, because Jason Goldberg was taken. So I got the most pretentious Instagram name possible, the Jason Goldberg. And everything's there. You can link to my podcast there. I have a podcast called The Jason Goldberg is Ruining Podcasting Podcast. I have content there. As Kevin's seen, there's a rap video of me on there that was posted recently. And there's a link in there somewhere to get a free copy of my book, Prison Break, as well, if you want to grab that.
Right on. This was awesome. I very much enjoyed this. I know Alan did as well, and this was very aligned for us. Alan, anything in closing, brother?
The last thing is, and this probably sounds like a pretentious question. It's not. Why should I read your book? And I actually am asking. And then, how do I get a copy?
Yeah. So you'll be able to get a free copy in the link in my bio and on Instagram.
Okay.
But the reason you should read it, maybe, is what I've tried to do is I've really tried to bring a lot more levity and humor to the personal growth trek, to that adventure. It can often feel very serious and it can feel very heavy. And I really believe that that levity and comedy is a conduit for transformation. And so if you like something that feels lighter but still has the power to impact you, if you like something that's very story-driven and it's not going to be a finger-wagging thing that's telling you why you're doing life wrong, and also if you like something that has very short chapters. I wrote this as a mosaic, as one of my coaches would call it, where the chapters are like 3 to 5 pages and they're not even sequential. So you can pick up anywhere in the book, read 3 or 4 pages and feel complete, feel like you've got something you can use out in the real world.
Awesome.
It's my kind of read right there.
Yeah, right. That's you definitely, your target audience is definitely Kevin, not me, but it's okay. Yeah. I appreciate you, man. I'm
I'll
very
let you
intense.
Know. I'll give you the, you're I'll doing give you life the, wrong, the cliff notes, you
know?
Alan.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. Yeah.
Jason, thank you so very much. This was genuinely very, very wonderful. I'm so glad we did this. Next Level Nation, make sure you follow Jason. He's a good dude with a good message, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
Please reach out.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Next Level University. We love connecting with the Next Level family, so make sure you follow us on Instagram. I am at NeverQuitKid, and Alan is at ALazarus88.
Also, if you found value in this episode, leave us a review using the link in the show notes, and please share this with someone who's ready to get to the next level.
We will talk to you tomorrow.